on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Might be a little bit early in the day to talk about bourbon, but we're gonna. Bourbon is the American spirit. Both blessing and bane serve neat ore on the rocks. To know its story is to know our own. The author Dane Hucklebridge wrote that in his new book, Bourbon, A History of the American Spirit. Technically, bourbon has to be made in Kentucky. But now, producers even in the Mid-Atlantic region are working to create their own variations. Hucklebridge will be talking about his book tomorrow at the Homewood Museum in Baltimore at 6 o'clock, and he joins me now on the line from New York. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
And we're also joined here in the studio by a mixologist, Corey Polioka, who works with Woodbury Kitchen. Corey, good to see you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Dane, let's start with the basics. How do you define bourbon?
Well, sure. I mean, bourbon is a whiskey, and what really sets bourbon apart from other whiskeys is its mash bill is going to be predominantly corn, and you can make whiskey from pretty much any grain, but corn has to be the dominant grain in the recipe. And then it's aged in new charred oak barrels, which gives it that sort of rich reddish color and the smoothness to it. And those are really the main defining characteristics. It's corn-based whiskey that's aged in charred oak barrels.
So the amount of corn versus other grades is going to change how the bourbon tastes and even how it looks in terms of its coloration?
Well, sure. I mean, whiskey, that's generally the real defining characteristic, I'd say, in a number of different whiskeys. You have scotch, which is predominantly barley, you know, rye whiskey, which is predominantly rye, and then you have bourbon, which is predominantly corn. And interestingly, bourbon can contain other grains. It oftentimes does have some rye or some wheat and definitely barley, but usually the predominant grain is corn. And that, you know, being specifically an American whiskey, it's interesting because corn, you know, is a uniquely and distinctly American grain. So that's one of the things that truly sets its place here in the New World.
So when did it appear in the New World? How did it actually come to exist? You give a complete history in your book. Tell folks where it first started.
Sure. Well, that's a tricky question. And, you know, the practice of making alcohol from corn is actually quite ancient. I mean, the Aztecs and other indigenous groups did make corn beer using this grain that was distinct to America. What they didn't have, however, was the technique of distillation, which is, you know, capturing the vapor and condensing it into what we think of as hard liquor, hard alcohol. And that came from Europe. And when colonists came from Europe, they brought that technology with them. And what they discovered on the American frontier was this new grain that grew very well there and that they could, you know, use just as well in their stills. The first mentions of making alcohol with corn by colonists go back to Jamestown, you know, Virginia, right when our own country was just taking its first baby steps. And, you know, whiskey existed from very early on, but corn really became the predominant grain in whiskeys west of the Appalachians when settlers, you know, in the late 1700s after the Revolution, started settling in Kentucky and Tennessee and in the other side of the mountains. And that's really when corn whiskeys took off. And as they started shipping those whiskeys down the river, you know, down the Ohio to the Mississippi and down to New Orleans and elsewhere, it picked up the age in the barrels. And, you know, that's sort of the origin story of bourbon whiskey.
So why then Kentucky in particular? Why is Kentucky so closely associated with bourbon? I mean, you can grow corn in plenty of other places, but was it just a matter of those folks happening to be in Kentucky and mastering the techniques?
Well, it's a great question because whiskey definitely isn't distinct to Kentucky. Their whiskeys were being made, you know, quite prominent ones in western Maryland and western Pennsylvania, parts of western Virginia. And early on, those were really rye whiskeys. What you see in Kentucky, there's a few reasons. I think really one of the main ones, though, is the presence of the Scots-Irish, that the Kentucky played host to a big migration of Scots-Irish migrants who crossed the mountains through the Cumberland Gap, you know, crossed the Appalachians and settled there. And they brought with them their whiskey-making tradition. And, you know, they had that same whiskey-making tradition that went back to the other side of the mountains and all the way back to the British Isles. But, you know, the grain that they suddenly found themselves with copious quantities of was corn. It grew so well in that sort of wilderness environment, particularly with the hotter summers and whatnot. And, yeah, and so this tradition of whiskey making that went all the way back to the old world just picked up a new world twist in that they started to use this native grain to make it.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. Dane Hucklebridge joins us from New York. His new book is called A History of the American Spirit. It's about bourbon. Corey Polioka joins us in the studio as well. Corey, you're a mixologist. What is good about bourbon in terms of your particular profession, mixing drinks?
Well, bourbon is great for us. And going back to the cocktail, which is an American invention and started here before going around the world, it aligned nicely with having it focus on an American spirit. We use it a lot with our beverage programs because it mixes so well with things we can get here. Honey, hard apple cider, and stuff that we can pull from farmers and orchards and aviaries in the area. It just played really well with how we wanted to source those ingredients.
So what makes it mix well with those ingredients? Is it better or how does it differ from, you know, gin or vodka or something else with some of the other hard liquors?
Well, from vodka, you know, I think it brings a flavor profile instead of an absence, which is great. Also, there's so many bourbons on the market that you can really take a whiskey and then highlight different aspects of it, and also proof. We tend to mix with a higher proof bourbon, 101, because when you're adding ice and other spirits, you want to retain that characteristic, but you're also watering it down at the same time.
And there are bourbons now being made here in the Mid-Atlantic region. Give us some examples.
So Smooth Ambler is a great one. It's our house spirit across the company now. We are seeing that coming in. They're yearling, which they're distilling, and then they're also sourcing a 7- and 10-year-old Reservoir bourbon out of Richmond, Virginia is a fantastic one. More of a sipper, less for mixing. And originally, when we first started kind of thinking about our beverage programs, Tuttletown in New York was a fantastic bourbon, too.
And Dane Hucklebridge, you write, as we said in the introduction, that, you know, to know the story of bourbon is to know our own history. In fact, some famous American historical figures have a pretty close association with the development and the popularity of bourbon. One of whom was a surprise to me, certainly, is George Washington. What was his connection?
Sure. Well, yeah, it's one of those interesting historical facts that I didn't know very much about before beginning the book. But, you know, George Washington wasn't just a founding father of our country. He was also a founding father of American whiskey. And in his Mount Vernon, you know, Mount Vernon farm, his plantation, he set up a whiskey distillery in cooperation with a Scottish, you know, caretaker who was helping with it. And he was a little skeptical at first because he'd had some bad experience with whiskey, I think. At that point, it had kind of an unsavory reputation as being the domain of hardscrabble frontiersmen, and there was the whiskey rebellion and all that. But he was sold on the idea, and it turned out that his little whiskey distillery did very well. His whiskey sold very well. It grew quickly. It became one of the largest commercial whiskey distilleries in the Eastern Seaboard. And he really succeeded in introducing whiskey, this sort of Scots-Irish frontier drink, to the Virginia planter class. It became, you know, popular throughout, you know, in a large part because of his efforts. And he made whiskey using both rye and corn. The exact recipe doesn't survive, so it's not necessarily clear if it was rye whiskey or something that would be close to bourbon, but he was definitely making whiskey using both rye and corn there, and, you know, it kind of set the stage for bourbon down the line.
So, Corey Polioka, it's an impression of mine, and tell me if this is a correct assessment, that the popularity of, these very, I guess you call them specialty bourbons. I mean, it's kind of like the specialty beers that, you know, we have these various local places as well as other microbreweries around the country making beer, even wine. With the hard liquor, the popularity of these specialty brands has increased exponentially. People are drinking these cocktails now more than they used to. It seems like 20 years ago, people would, you know, slam down a couple of glasses of Chardonnay and call it a day, you know?
Yeah.
But now that's no longer the case. How do you account for that?
Well, we're seeing definitely a rise in micro distilling. I was reading there's more. I think we passed 1 million barrels of bourbon put up last year, the most since Prohibition. A lot in the bigger houses, but also the smaller local ones. I think it's being driven by the cocktail resurgence. We see a lot of people ordering spirits off the shelf, but really, if we're mixing with something, people are really interested in it, and it's their kind of segue into a small craft spirit.
And Dane Hucklebridge, how does, for example, bourbon consumption compare now to what it was in Washington's time or, you know, say, throughout the 1800s?
I think at the moment it's very high because of this resurgence in popularity. And what you see historically stepping back was, you know, bourbon's had its up and downs. The 50s and 60s were a boom period for bourbon. You had the whole baby boomer generation, suburbs, cocktail party, sort of Mad Men type thing. And that was really, you know, thanks to Madison Avenue in large part, bourbon really took off in those decades. Then what you saw in the 70s and 80s, sort of the bottom fell out from under it. And the bourbon market was really in a tough place in the 70s and 80s to the extent that some people, you know, even within the industry, questioned whether it really had a future as an American spirit, as a commonly enjoyed, you know, alcoholic beverage. But then I think thanks in large part to the small batch movement that first started in the late 80s and really started to take off in the 90s, people, you know, regained appreciation for bourbon's potential as you know, as a delicious, rich historical drink and not just, you know, sort of a cheap bottom shelf liquor. And, you know, that I think that really set the stage for this bourbon renewal, this resurgent interest in bourbon you're seeing today. And from that initial small batch movement, you've seen craft distilling, you know, more artisanal directions sort of branch off that. So, I, you know, this resurgence you're seeing now, I think, you know, for a long time you had a dip, but it's starting to take off again. And I think top even the levels from the 50s and 60s when it was really the bourbon heyday.
And you write, Dane, in your book about the first printed ad for bourbon, which appeared in 1821. So how much of this is a matter of marketing? I mean, in the 70s and 80s, during the sort of nadir of bourbon, was it just that it was getting pushed out by wine and by other alternatives because they were doing a better job at selling it?
Sure. And I think it was a culmination of a number of factors, but partly of which was just the quality, honestly, wasn't very good. It had become so mass-produced and become so associated with the establishment. And, you know, beginning in the late 60s, 70s, there was sort of a counterculture movement. People were rebelling against against, quote-unquote, the establishment. And bourbon had become so ingrained in kind of American middle-class culture that was rebelled against as well. People wanted to explore other things, wine, you know, cocktails, whatnot. I think what you're seeing now that to an extent, and marketing is certainly part of it, but I think the resurgent interest in bourbon is part of a larger cultural movement where in a world where things really do seem more mass-produced, more global, you know, just bigger and less personal, people have this interest, this nostalgia and interest in rediscovering the parts of our culture that really do feel local, unique to us, and artisanally crafted. And, you know, people are searching for that again, and I guess with the feeling that it's been lost over the years.
Well, Dane Hucklebridge and Corey Pagliocca, I really appreciate your time for both of you, and look forward to your presentation tomorrow night. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Dane Hucklebridge is the author of Bourbon, A History of the American Spirit. Corey Pagliocca is the mixologist for Woodbury Kitchen. Both of them will be speaking about bourbon and giving out some taste samples at the Homewood Museum in Baltimore tomorrow night. Starts at 6 o'clock. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning.